Over two centuries ago, it was England that taxed our tea. Now it's Brussels trying to regulate our companies. Under new European regulations, American businesses face crushing fines, forced disclosures, and foreign red tape that kills jobs here at home. America's laws should be written in America, not Brussels. Reject European regulatory overreach and uphold Trump's trade deal. Paid for by Americans for Limited Government.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Mulletcast, the podcast where business and pleasure collide. My name is Evan Balmer.
It's Mike Marcia. What's going on?
What's happening, Mike?
Same old.
How are you today?
Good.
Awesome. Today we are joined by Tyler Veit. Tyler is the front man of the Dead Ramblers and guitarist. Check out the Dead Ramblers on Instagram at the Dead Ramblers and on Facebook. Look for the Dead Ramblers. Tyler's going to be, the Dead Ramblers will be at Jamian's in Red Bank headlining. They're doing three sets on the 17th. And of course, they are part of the first annual Mulletcast Live, aka Mulletpalooza.
There you go.
That will be May 23rd at House of Independence in Asbury Park. Tyler, what's going on, man?
What's up, dude?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
That was a long-winded intro. Are you still awake over there?
Yes, I am. All right,
awesome.
Thank you so much for having me here.
No problem. Thanks for being here. The way I came across you guys is I went out to see another former Mulletcast guest, Connor Bracken and the Mother Leeds Band, and you guys were on the same set at the Stone Pony.
Oh yeah, that was a good show.
And I was like, holy shit, these guys are insane. So I reached out, and here you are.
Here I am, man.
Thanks for being here.
So honored to be here. I'm very excited for the House of Independence show. We never played there before, so
that's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, man. Stone Pony show was really cool, too. You know, that's cool that you guys have started a show and you're interviewing, like, local musicians. That's really great. You know?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the local scene here is insane. Like, obviously, that night of seeing you guys and then Connor and the Mother Leeds Band was, like, intense. Mm-hmm. It's crazy that there are so many talented local artists around here.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Asbury is pretty much where it's happening right now. I mean, there's so much music going on, and I think the cool thing is how it's kind of going in all different directions.
Right.
It's not just rock or it's not just hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a mix between funk, hip-hop, rock. There's pop music. There's all kinds of stuff going on. So
Right. That
night in particular was really cool because I never met Connor prior to that.
Right.
So it was pretty cool getting the chance to kind of talk to him, hear his band a little bit.
Mm.
And they were good. You know, they had kind of, you know, a little bit different than us, but kind of along the same lines of like that classic rock and roll kind of sound, energy, you know.
Yeah, but you guys could definitely play together, but you're certainly not, you know, the same band.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Tell us about how you got started musically.
How I did?
Yeah.
Or the Ramblers?
Let's start with you.
I've been playing music probably since I was maybe like first grade, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up hearing a lot of Bruce Springsteen, Van Morrison, Jimi Hendrix, The Who, through my dad. So as I got older, I just got really into electric guitar because I was never really into like hip hop or anything like that when I was young. My dad just was always showing me new, really good guitar players, really good bands.
Right.
So as I got older, middle school, I started, you know, taking it a little bit more serious, playing guitar a little bit more, practicing every day. And then after, you know, well, in high school, I want to say probably around when I was maybe like 15 years old, I think, or it might have even been 14. That was the first time I ever got to play in a bar because my father's a bartender. So he was able to get me to sit in with the Mike Dalton band at the Idle Hour in Point Pleasant.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Playing some songs. And then right after high school, or I want to say actually midway in high school when I was like a sophomore, was when I started actually doing shows in bars.
That's cool.
Which is cool. Yeah. You know, because I wasn't the kid that was like going to high school parties or like popular in high school.
Right.
But I was at least the kid that was like making money playing in bars, like playing music with like older guys.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That is cool. So when you were in middle school, were you taking lessons or were you just kind of working through? Yeah.
Yeah, I took lessons for years with John Clarizio right in Point Pleasant.
Mm.
And he was a really great man. He's no longer with us, but he was a really good teacher because he was very just patient with me and he would show me like very easy songs like House of the Rising Sun and My Girl, like very
that always
easy.
Comes up. That song always
yeah,
comes up.
It's
yeah.
always like this simple. Yeah. Like,
so it's really funny. It's like I always tell this. Like my first, I suck at guitar, but like when I was probably like I don't know what how old I was, but I wanted to play. Like the dude who's teaching me House of the Rising Sun. It's so funny. It must like at the time that had to be like just the guitar.
Yeah, it's classic.
Like,
oh yeah,
you know, like here's the first song you learn, kind of thing.
Because for me, like I didn't understand like how keys worked, and I didn't. All I knew was like single riffs. Mm. So that was the first song that was like these are chords, you know, right. A minor, C major. And I remember I was like super slow trying to do it, but I had him for years. And then when I started getting better at soloing, I switched over to a guy named Glenn Madison.
Right.
And he was kind of the guy that like really taught me how to play the blues.
Okay.
Because as I got older, especially around maybe like sophomore, junior year, I got better at guitar and I knew like, all right, what do I want to sound like? Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of guitar player do I want to be? And I knew like I don't want to be the metal guy. I don't want to be the guy that's tapping and just making sounds. I was kind of more into Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix is my favorite.
Okay.
And Stevie Ray Vaughan and Eric Clapton. So he was the teacher that kind of showed me like, all right, well, this is how you play blues and this is how you do like Stevie Ray Vaughan licks.
Right.
And then outside of high school, I was in a lot of bands before Dead Ramblers. Mm-hmm. I started my own band called Bad Minds and we were like a psychedelic blues rock reggae fusion kind of band.
Right.
It's a melting pot of genres. Yeah,
just throwing everything together. Uh-huh. And then after that was Wicked Hollow and then Dead Ramblers and just still playing, you know.
That's cool. Nice.
How many years have you guys been together?
Dead Ramblers, I'd say, well, the Dead Ramblers were a project before this. Mm. We were in a band called Wicked Hollow.
Okay.
And it was actually the same members. I played guitar, Andrew Lawler on drums, Anthony Marino on bass. And then we also had another lead singer who played guitar as well named Brian Wood. And then we played as Wicked Hollow, I want to say, for maybe like 3 years, I want to say, maybe 2.5. And then that project disbanded. And then me, Andrew, my drummer, and Anthony, the bassist, we started our own project without Brian.
Right.
Because he kind of wanted to go in his own direction, do more of pop music, and we were kind of like, no, we want to stay grounded in blues rock, so we started the Dead Ramblers. So the Dead Ramblers, I want to say, have been a project since maybe June of last year.
Right.
So not very long.
And
you
guys have an EP out, like on Spotify, iTunes, everywhere.
Awesome.
Where'd you record that?
We actually recorded that right in my house.
Oh, did you really?
I went to school for 4 years at OCVTS in Lakehurst, and I went there for audio engineering, so I basically just gained a really good education on how to record any project that I would be in.
Right.
So I convinced my band, like, listen, like, it would not make sense for us to pay a couple $1,000, go in a studio, record something that we hate, and there's a recording engineer that's doing it his way.
Right.
Because that's the thing. When you go in a recording studio and you work with the recording engineer, they're basically going to become your producer whether you want it or not.
Sure.
They're going to tell you how they think it should be recorded, and they'll put insights, which I'm not against. I mean, that could definitely benefit a recording project.
Right.
But I think for us, because we've been playing so long and we've become so comfortable with each other, we're like, no, we don't want a producer. We just want to do what we do live, but just get it recorded, get the energy recorded, not have it feel plastic or fake.
Right.
You know, no autotune, no bullshit, none of that.
Right.
So I just told them, let's invest in a mixer, let's borrow some microphones from a friend of mine, and let's just do it in my house.
That's cool.
We'll just set up in my living room and we'll just get it done. Mm. And it was the best way to do it. You know, we had Andrew set up in my living room. Well, first off, we had to move like everything.
Right.
We had to move the couch, TV, there's all these pictures hanging up, and I was like, all right, well, we got to move this stuff because it's just going to come crashing down once we start playing. So Andrew set up in the living room. I used 3 microphones.
Right.
That was it because he's loud enough. And then I set up Anthony in one room, with the bass cabinet kind of hidden, and then I set up in the back room. Right. So everything was kind of like evenly distributed throughout the house.
That's why.
And then we would do like three takes of each song, and then, you know, just overdub the rest. We did guitar, bass, drums, and then I would just overdub, you know, another guitar and vocals, and that
That's
was
awesome.
It.
That's cool.
So you clearly got the support of your parents then, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
get out of the house for 2 days, 3 days.
They were definitely not. My dad was like, oh, yeah.
Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, you know, it's fine, but my mom was definitely like, I don't want this. And I was like, well, we already kind of like are doing it. So.
Don't come home.
Sorry, we booked some time.
Yeah. But then, like, you know, we get played on the radio and then I'm cranking it like, you see? Right. Like, you see? You allowed us to record. Like, now we're on the radio.
That's right. So were you singing in your former band?
I was, yeah. I wasn't the lead vocalist. Right. I was more the kind of background, you know, harmonies, but
so is it tough now being the lead vocalist and guitarist?
No, not really. I think just because, like, before Wicked Hollow, I was singing lead vocal. Okay. You know, I was singing lead vocal for Bad Minds. I sang lead vocal for a blues band that I was in. So, if anything, it was kind of just like, yeah, I think I'm ready to sing in front of people. Because when we did have, like, Wicked Hollow, I was definitely kind of like, all right, you know, I think I should probably, you know, just focus on guitar playing and maybe not really worry about being the lead vocalist. And then once Dead Ramblers kind of came around, I was kind of like, all right, time to step up to the plate again.
Yeah. Right. That's cool.
I love that it's, you know, you like blues because you don't get a lot of young, I feel like young bands doing blues.
Not anymore. Not really. Yeah. I mean, like, we're definitely more influenced by the stuff from like the 60s and 70s. And it's kind of hard to find. Like most bands nowadays, I feel like are pop punk or they're, you know, indie, and I think like we're kind of more trying to keep it really rooted in, you know, Led Zeppelin, Hendrix, Sabbath, and
And I think for a lot of people, like for me, I know, like, I'm influenced by the people that are influenced by the blues, so it's like a lot of people are probably don't even know they're influenced by the blues, like, because whoever they're into, that's what they're interpreting, you know?
Yeah,
what
absolutely.
I mean?
And
I know you mentioned Zeppelin, and one thing, like, I loved your original material, and you guys closed your show with Dazed and Confused.
You said that was
crazy good.
It was
he's like, dude, these literally it was like a flashback into the
I was like, this could go like horribly wrong. I mean, that's not only just like playing Zeppelin in general, but that's like a friggin' bold song to play, because there's a lot of shit going on. Vocally, it's intense. Guitar wise, like a whole band, and like time changes, and these guys, like, I mean, it was unbelievable.
Thank you.
Crushed it. Like, it was insane.
That was a song too that we were debating as a band, like, can we do this? Because we've done it a million times at shows, but I had a sinus infection, and I was like just at the period of getting over it. And 2 days prior, I was throwing up. I had a stomach virus.
Oh, man.
So I had over stomach virus, getting over sinus infection. And I remember saying to my bandmates, like, listen, you know, let's do all original. And like, if we're going to do a cover, we should do Dazed. And both my bandmates were like, yes. But a couple days before the show, I was like, I don't think I can do this. And my drummer was like, really? You don't think you have it? I'm like, dude, I'm like, I'm not trying to go on stage and be like, you know? But then the day of, I was kind of just in that, you know, like, fuck it mood. And just like, we got to blow people away. And like, I mean, our original songs are good, but like, because people don't know them yet, you know, because they're not popular or anything, like, you need at least one cover to like suck people in and make them go like, wow, they're gonna do this right now.
Right.
Like, you don't.
And it worked.
Yeah, it totally worked.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah, I got a call the next day. Dude, it was crazy.
I had a woman come up to me like after the pony show. Like, I'm standing there at the bar having a beer. And she comes up to me, and she's this, like, hippie woman. I have no idea who she was.
Right.
I don't even remember her name, but she was just like, oh, you know, you guys were great, and you guys had this really, like, psychedelic sound. And I was like, yeah, we do. And she's like, kind of makes me think of, like, LSD or something. And I was like, yeah, I know. I know what you mean. Like, I've been there. And telling her that, she's like, really? I'm like, yes.
That's classic.
We just, we just have fun. You know, it's fun doing stuff like that. Especially when you do a song like Dazed and you could have that kind of trippy part where you don't know how long it's going to get extended. You just kind of feel the crowd out.
Yeah.
But there's definitely that feeling like every time we first started, I can always hear at least one dude like, uh-oh. Like, oh, boy.
There we go.
It's going to be rough.
Many have tried and failed.
Yeah. Right?
So do you have like – is there a favorite song to play of like somebody else's?
Of somebody else's? Yeah. Dazed is definitely probably – that might be our favorite.
Yeah. I probably didn't realize how much Dazed, like, I mean, you know, I like Zeppelin. That wouldn't be like a song I immediately think of. But then to see it live, you're like, holy shit, that's like a really sick guitar song and just musically a sick song.
It really is.
So like seeing it live just like takes it to another level. It's intense.
Especially because like you have to really have not only like obviously vocal chops, guitar chops, but like I'll watch Andrew, my drummer, play in it, and he's just fucking killing triplets. I mean, the part when he's just going, dilla, 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 dilla. I'm watching him just like, how is his arms not breaking right now, like trying to replicate that? And then even Anthony, my bass player, just to like keep up with it.
Right.
It's just a fun song. That's a really fun song to play. Fairies Wear Boots by Sabbath. We like doing that song a lot. We'll do like a Jimi Hendrix medley that we like playing a lot. But
right.
Yeah, I'd say that those songs for the most part.
That's cool. So, I mean, is that all the kind of stuff you're going to mix in for the Jamian's gig when you're playing such a long night?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of songs. We have like at least like 30 songs planned. So we're doing majority cover songs.
Right.
You know, we're doing Cream. I think we're doing an Allman Brothers song, Buddy Miles song, you know, a lot of classics.
Right.
Trying to really throw in a lot of 70s rock, you know.
Nice. Mike's already lining up his babysitter.
I already put it in the calendar and I text my wife.
Like, we got to go to
this. Jamie's are a spot. We go there all the time.
That's cool. So Jamie's 17th, you know what time that starts up?
10 o'clock.
All right, cool.
Nice.
Sweet.
And no cover charge. So anybody at home listening, you guys... best bar, you don't have to pay at the door.
That is
just walk right in.
Nice.
Good beer selection too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I haven't seen a band there. Is good sound in there too?
Yeah, there's pretty good sound there. Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean I think the cool thing about it is, you know, I got to talk to Jamie and the owner and he's just a really, really, really nice guy. And I think it's cool that as soon as we played the Jersey Rock show, he was like, you know, I would love to have you guys and it is a cool spot. Matt O'Ree, I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce his name. He's a blues rock guitar player. He plays there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of gigs there. And Shady Street Show Band or something like that. They play there a lot. But
it's
a cool spot. It's got pretty good sound.
Yeah.
You know?
I haven't been there with the new stage yet for music. I've been there to hang out, but haven't seen anyone live. They used to do the reggae nights right in the front.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And that was like super narrow, cramped space, but... yeah, it looks pretty good with the new stage.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. So you mentioned the Jersey Rock show. Was that something related to The Rat?
You
got some attention from them. How'd that work out?
We got linked up with Tom Hanley from Jersey Rock, and he had liked us when we were Wicked Hollow.
Okay.
So when we started the new band, I immediately reached out to him and just said, hey, Tom, you know, we're just to let you know, we're still in a project if you're interested in promoting us.
Mm.
And then he just reached out to us and said, you know, I totally support you guys 100%. When you guys put out material, let me know. So we got featured as the Jersey Rock Band of the Week. And you just played like some cuts from Color, Space, and Time, our EP.
Right.
Nice.
On Jersey Rock. And he's a really good guy, you know. I love the fact that there's shows like Jersey Rock and like this that are promoting young bands and guys that are just like trying to get out there because, you know, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard to even just get venues to, like, give you a shot, you know, because you could be like, oh, I've been playing for, like, 10 years, but unless you don't, like, if you don't have the numbers to, like, bring enough people into a venue, they're going to be like, sorry.
I know, it's a weird mix, right? It's like, sometimes whether you're good or not goes out the window. It's like, how many people are you going to bring, you know?
It's like, how many Instagram followers do you have?
Do they actually, like, check that kind of...
I mean, I definitely think so because every venue that I've reached out, I mean, we've played shows in New York. We've done shows in Philly before the Dead Ramblers. Dead Ramblers haven't played in the city yet, but when we were Wicked Hollow, we were doing a lot of gigs. We were playing Rockwood Music Hall in New York, Knitting Factory, The right. Bitter End. We were playing shows in Philly. We did a show in Connecticut, playing shows all over Jersey.
Right.
But you definitely start to realize, like, okay, there's a trend. They're looking at – they want to see – I mean, any venue wants to see, like, how many people.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Realistically, can you bring out right. the venue? Yeah. I mean, everybody's going to say, oh, I could bring out 100 people. But realistically, how many
right.
are you really going to bring out to a venue? You know, there's a lot of kind of politics involved
yeah.
with it, but...
Yeah,
that's the business.
That's the exact conversation we had when we were talking about the Mullet Cast live, right? We were like,
yeah, yeah.
No, well, like, how many people are you going to bring?
Yeah. I told him, I was like, I'm good for at least 15. I can get 15.
That's how he got on board, man. Yeah. Exactly. Actually, I just want to say we did not have the conversation. It was all about the music, and we're excited to have you on the lineup.
Yeah.
So, what's it like? I mean, aside from playing Dazed when I saw you, you're clearly like, you kind of do go into another place when you're playing guitar. Like, I can tell you're into it. And
oh,
like,
yeah.
So what's it like, I'll never play a solo like that in my whole life. So what's that feeling like? Like to just
to actually
that?
Nail it?
Yeah.
It's a high. Yeah. I mean, it really is. Like, it doesn't matter if you're playing in front of 5 people or 50 people, 100 people, like when you can play in front of anybody mm-hmm. and actually really, whether it's your own material or somebody else's, and you really nail it and you can actually feel the energy from a crowd. I mean, it helps when there's a lot of people in the place.
Right.
You know, the Stone Pony, we had a good show. So I think like that night, I think the chemistry was just so good. Everything felt good that when you actually get done and you play a song, you nail it. And you can feel kind of the feeling from the crowd. You do definitely get like an adrenaline mm-hmm. rush from it. You get a high from it. And for me, like I never really got to a point where I was just like, oh, I'm the best guitar player.
Right.
I don't know. I just love playing music.
Yeah.
And same thing with my bandmates. We love doing it. We've been doing it long enough that to where it just kind of comes natural to us. We don't like force it, you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm not trying to sound cliche. You just kind of get just like a natural high from it,
right.
you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, are you speaking through your guitar? Like, as cheesy as that sounds, is that like a form
oh, no.
of like you're
yeah.
like this is my expression kind of thing?
Definitely. Like, I mean, yeah. there's definitely moments where like I get very insecure like as a vocalist. Mm-hmm. So you know, even though I could have like some people come up to me and be like, "Hey, man, you got a really good voice." I think like I probably feel more comfortable when I can just play
mm.
and not really think about what I'm doing, just let it flow out. Even if I don't hit all the notes or
right.
maybe hit everything right, if I could just express myself through the guitar playing, yeah, it definitely feels like that's more of my voice than my own voice.
That's
because
cool.
I think I've just gotten to know myself well enough to know what I'm grounded in, like mm-hmm. what my roots are. And I love hearing guitar players and hearing all their influences kind of come out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like you could listen to Jimmy Page and you could hear like BB King coming out of it, and you could hear Django Reinhardt, and you could hear all these different influences. And then you listen to Jimi Hendrix and you're like, all right, I hear Albert King, and I hear Freddie King. And then you listen to Stevie Ray Vaughan, you're like, all right, I hear the same.
Right.
So when you can actually like get on that level to where like, okay, maybe you're not, you know, you're not Jimi Hendrix, you're not Albert King or anything,
right.
but if you can at least understand the concept and how they're approaching the instrument and how they're not really thinking like, oh, it's in the key of E and I need to they're just letting it go. They're
right.
just literally turning the guitar into a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like we were talking about the blues before. I mean, the hairs on my arms will stand up when I hear Albert King play, because he is a minimal guitar player where he was a guitar player that wasn't thinking about, okay, I got to hit all these notes and tap. He would hit like maybe 3-4 notes, but he would make it sound like a human voice.
Mm.
You know, he would make it sound like somebody crying or somebody yelling.
Wow.
And I think like That's all I try to do. That's right. The kind of approach I try to take when I play guitar.
Damn,
that's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Sorry, am I trying to get a?
Nah, I'm excited.
Guys are sweating over
here. I wasn't into some ponies. I want to see the shit.
Yeah, totally. Now it is funny because, like, you're right. That's when you just take another level, right? And that's the difference between, like, you know, playing around and learning some chords and and becoming an artist, basically. You know,
it's a good feeling when you can. Like I said, when you could just get into a wavelength of another artist, it's not necessarily that you're like, oh, I'm the next Jimi Hendrix or I'm this. If you're a humble musician and you know you're good enough to where you can listen to something and be like, all right, I'm going to do that now. Right. Or I'm going to learn it my way. You know, maybe I can't do it exactly like they did it, but I'm going to put my own footprint on it.
Yeah.
It is definitely a good feeling when you can kind of get in that wavelength.
Right.
And then when people come and see it and then people are kind of picking up your influences, and you know, like sometimes I'll think like, I don't know if people are gonna listen to this song and maybe hear like, oh, like we're being influenced by that.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing you know, there'll be like a dude in his 50s. It's like, are you guys influenced by this artist? And then you're like, wow, like people actually, you know, they could pick it up right away. You know,
that's pretty cool. Yeah. So how much goes into like outside of just your playing style, like gear and stuff like that, into like making your sound, like guitar selection, amp selection, pedals, that kind of stuff? Like, where does that come from?
I got very into like vintage gear.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough to actually get a Fender Bandmaster Reverb head for free and a custom bass cabinet from a good family friend of ours. He's basically a relative of ours named Bob. Mm-hmm. And I was really young. I think I was probably like 8th grade, and one day he was just like, he had heard me play guitar, and he was like, do you want an amp? You know, I have an amp in my garage that's not being used. And at the time, I had no idea, no education on amps whatsoever. I was just like, oh, it's a big amp. It'll be loud. I'll take it. And then years later, I started doing research on tube amps, and I realized I have a late 60s Fender Reverb amp head that's like worth a couple $1,000s just sitting in the garage.
Wow.
And I started realizing, like, those are the things, like, the amp you play, the guitar you play, like, all those things, like you said, they make up not just your tone, but, like, your voice, you know? Because I think, like, you know, again, like, I always talk about Jimi Hendrix because he's like, my fucking god. Like,
right.
I love listening to him play because he was a guy, he is my favorite guitar player of all time.
Right.
Because he didn't use a tremendous amount of pedals, but he used, you know, Fuzz Face, Univibe, Wah-Wah. He used an Octavia pedal, and that was like it.
Mm-hmm.
Where you see all these guys using big monster pedal boards.
Right.
He was using, for the most part, 4 pedals, crank and Marshall stacks to their limit.
Right.
And using the feedback as almost like a sound of its own, an instrument in a way.
Wow.
And I think, like, for me, like, watching a guitar player like him, I was like, all right, well, I want to do that. I don't want to use like a bunch of effects, but I want to get in that wavelength of cranking tube amps up because you get a specific tone from tube amps that you cannot get from a solid state amplifier.
Right.
And yeah, I definitely like love tube amps. I definitely love the sound of, I play a Fender Stratocaster. It's an American, and it has 2 single coil pickups and the bottom pickup is a humbucker.
Right.
So I can get the Hendrix tones and the Stevie Ray Vaughan tones, and then when I want to get the Jimmy Page tones, I can just, you know, flick it. So yeah, I try to keep my gear and my tone like open.
Right.
So that it's not just limited to like one sound or just one thing.
Right.
That I could kind of branch off in any direction.
That's pretty cool.
You know?
There's a crazy story, and like I can't remember who was there, but it's like a story of this really early Hendrix gig, like in London. And I think I heard like Paul McCartney telling a story, but like the audience was like Paul McCartney, Eric Clapton.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jimmy Page was there. Like basically
everyone
was there to see Hendrix. And like, it just sounded like the most intense like gig ever, probably, because he just blew people's minds.
Oh yeah. I can't even imagine like what it must have been like to be alive in England in the late 60s. I have no idea, because I just think, like, the amount of bands, the amount of talent that was around at the time, between you had Cream, you had Hendrix, you had The Who, you had the early makings of Led Zeppelin, you just had so much going on musically.
Right.
And the best part is, like, when you really go back to the 60s and you listen to not just those bands, but, like, like the Blues Breakers, or like a lot of people don't know that Fleetwood Mac was a blues band.
Right.
You know, before Stevie Nicks, before Rumors, like right. they were a blues band. There was Peter Green. And when you listen to all those bands from the 60s, like they were all listening.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
To Elmore James, B.B. King, Albert King, they were all listening to the blues. They were all white English boys
right.
that were hearing this stuff from America going, wow, like these guys yeah. are these yeah. guys are talking about, like, you know, sipping whiskey and getting drunk and, you know, cheating, you know, being with a woman and right. cheating on your wife or something. Like, just talking about real things, like not just going out and singing like I Want to Hold Your Hand,
right,
but actually talking about stuff that was really happening,
right. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I'm so grateful and fortunate to have the bandmates that I have that mm-hmm. are actually, like, they're into that music.
Right.
They're not just like, well, no, let's go the, you know,
right.
Jonas Brothers route.
I don't think we would be inviting you in if you guys were going that route.
That's right. Well, I would go to Jamie's on the 17th, but the Jonas Brothers are in town that weekend. So unfortunately, I can't make, because I'm real into alt rock, you know. Yeah, totally. No, that's intense. So, so you found all dudes that were into similar music. Like, is that what brought you guys together originally? Did you guys go to school together? How'd you meet your bandmates?
I met them. It's kind of confusing. I'll try to explain it as best as I can. Like, before Wicked Hollow, mm-hmm. the project before the Dead Ramblers, which is was the three of us from the Dead Ramblers and
right.
then Brian Wood. Before that, Andrew, my drummer, Anthony, my bass player, and Brian from our last band, they had a band together. I think at the time was called the Cahoots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they went through a couple different band names, but I basically met Andrew, my drummer, and Anthony when they were in a band with Brian. And at the time, I was a solo artist, so I had played a show at Tech Fest, and they had heard me. And that was like the first time I ever met my bass player.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the show, he was like, "Man, you were fucking great. I really love your guitar playing." And then what happened was that, like, they had another guitar player named Nick, and then he ended up going on tour with a band to play bass.
Right.
So they needed a guitar player for that summer to fill in for shows.
Gotcha.
And at that time, they had switched names from Cahoots to Wicked Hollow, our mm-hmm. last band. So they were like, "Hey, Tyler, you know, would you want to do some gigs with us, fill in for Nick while he's on tour with another band?"
Right.
I said, "Absolutely." So I started playing with them, and then that's when I really kind of got to know Andrew and Anthony really well, and I had a lot of fun doing gigs with them. And then Nick came back from tour and became the guitar player again for Wicked Hollow.
Right.
So I wasn't filling in anymore. And then one day I just get a text from Nick saying, "Hey, man, do you want to join Wicked Hollow?"
Right.
And I was like, "Well, so what would go on? Is there going to be like three guitar players now?" Or And he was like, "No, I'm leaving the band. Like, I'm going to join this band, The Rex, and I'm going to move to California. And do you want to replace me?" You know, he was basically right. asking me to just replace him. And
right.
I was like, "Yeah, if the other bandmates want me, like, sure, I'll do it."
Right.
And then once I got into Wicked Hollow, it was the most fun I ever had.
Yeah.
Because I think every project before then, you know, when you're in a band with guys that are older than you and they're just at a different place in life,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're going to have fun. But it's a lot more fun when you have guys that are right around your same age.
Right.
That are, like, you know, how can I say it? They're experiencing basically the same things that you are in life.
Right.
And it's really a lot of fun when you have guys around the same age that are, like, into the same exact old school kind of music. Because, you know, like I said, before then, I never really had that.
Right.
I was always playing with the older musicians.
Right.
And I think when Wicked Hollow broke up and we were having disagreements with Brian, I definitely was worried, where I thought, like, man, I really hope that Andrew and Anthony, like, don't want to stop playing music. And the fact that they were like, "No, man, like, we want to keep playing music with you."
Mm.
I literally tell them every day, like, "I love you guys. Like, thank you for
right.
wanting to keep this going." Because we just, like I said, we're just, having fun. We're not putting that pressure on ourselves where it's like, we need to make it to that point. We need to be this big success story.
Right.
We're just having as much fun as possible. Because when we were Wicked Hollow, we put way too much pressure on ourselves. Like, if we don't get to this point as Wicked Hollow, then it's a waste of time. We were kind of starting to think like that, where it's like, we need to be at Greta Van Fleet status. We need to be at this, like, you know, when you're setting those expectations for yourself, you can really, like, let yourself down in the end.
Yeah.
And then you start to ask yourself, well, like, why am I playing music in the first place? Is it really to become this big famous rock star?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it because I'm in a band with two of my best friends and we just want to have fun? And that's the thing. We're just,
I like that.
We're just having fun right now.
It's a good mentality.
Yeah.
I think it really should be everyone's mentality.
Right.
Like, if you're just trying to, like, get your name out there, if you're just in the business because you want to make money, you want to get laid, you just care about, you know, getting high and going on stage. And I just feel like you are just getting involved within for the wrong reason. Yeah. And I could probably debate that with a lot of people where people would say, like,
so you're saying I should cancel my guitar?
Yeah. I mean, like, all that stuff is great. I'm not saying it's the, but I think, like, if you're going on stage and you're not having fun, you're just doing it because you want to be this big rock star then.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I think there's, like, it's probably like a mullet approach, right? You got to mix the business and pleasure a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, like, if you're all about the business, right, that's going to shine through and you're going to be a boring band, right?
Yeah.
If you have – like, the first thing you have to be able to do is to play, have good material, those things. And if – almost like everything else will take care of itself. You know what I mean? Like, if you guys went out, you won over a ton of people that night at Stone Pony, like, that had never seen you before, right? So if you go out with that mentality, that's going to shine through.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to, like – you know, the guy who's the marketing executive running around the club trying to overpromote himself. You know what I mean?
I think just the fact that we're having more fun now as the Dead Ramblers is coming through in our performance. Where people, like our close friends and relatives, the people that are coming out to shows to see us, they can see that we're just having fun.
Mm.
You know, even when we fuck up, like even if the drummer doesn't hit something right or something falls or Anthony misses a note, or I, you know, hit my tuner pedal by accident and my tone goes away. You know, anything that happens. Like, we just laugh it off. We just have such good chemistry, I think, with one another. And I think the fact is that, you know, because we love each other like brothers, it comes through in the performance. It really does. Because, you know, we were talking about Asbury before and the huge music scene that's going on. And I think one of the... You know, I'm just going to be flat out honest. I think one of the problems with a lot of people playing in Asbury is there's a fakeness going on. There's the people out there that are really genuine and that are really putting a lot of hard work in, and they just want to get their music out there. They don't care about money. They don't care about being this big rock star. And then there's the people out there that really have, like, an ego issue. And I think, like, for us, like, we've definitely realized, like, okay, like, what bands, what artists to, like, not maybe associate ourselves with, because we don't want people getting that idea about us, because we're just we just let everything flow out. We don't
can
force.
You name them right now?
I will not do that.
No, it's a weird thing. It's like, you know, and to be honest, like, Asbury's not the be all end all, right? For a lot of reasons, right? First of all, Jersey's a huge musically diverse state. I mean,
exactly.
Long Branch, Red Bank, you know, just there's in this area, there's scenes, like huge, like, music opportunities, and, like, you want to hit them all.
Mm-hmm.
The Brunswicks, you know, like Trenton, there's, you know, up in Hudson County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're very fortunate that Asbury is in, like, our backyard. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Asbury. I love that there's a scene brewing there.
Definitely.
But, you know, there's also a huge music scene in New Jersey as a whole. And, you know, to be honest, everyone's goal is, like, to go beyond that, right?
Yeah, I mean, you just hit the nail right on the head. I mean, everywhere that you go, there's different music everywhere. I mean, just in New Jersey alone, you're right. I mean, and the thing I've noticed is that there's different music in every areas, but at the same time, like I said, just in Asbury alone, it's not just, like, rock. Like, you have, like, a lot going on. There's, like, hip-hop. There's funk music. There's all kinds of bands going on right now. But then, like, when you go into New York, like, when we played shows in New York, I would notice, like, certain trends, how it's a lot of, like, solo artists and people kind of singing into loop pedals.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And then, you know, I went to California to visit my brother.
Right.
And then I could see, like, out there, okay, they got more of, like, there's, like, hip-hop's big out there, I noticed.
Right.
And a lot of the hip-hop is different than, like, East Coast hip-hop.
Right.
You know, there's always that East versus West.
Sure.
Where, like, the West Coast, you could hear more of, like, the R&B, jazzy feel. Mm. And then out here, when you hear East Coast, it's, like, anytime I think of East Coast hip-hop, I always think of, like, Tribe Called Quest. So
right.
I love that every place you could go to, there's always, like, different music happening.
Right.
Where, like, you know, now in 2019, it's not like the 70s, and not that I was alive then, but where the 70s, everything was rock and everything, and then it was like disco, and then it was punk, and, you know, you went to New York for punk, and you went to California for the Grateful Dead type stuff.
Right.
Today, it's sort of like, if you're a band, or if you want to start a band, you can go in any direction you want.
Right.
You can, and I think that's what we're trying to do. Like, our first EP was a lot more psychedelic, like, we're definitely trying to go for that late 60s, 70s kind of bluesy, psychedelic jam rock.
Right.
I think the next EP that we do, we're going to try to go more funky, get more songs to get people kind of dancing, and just kind of throw everything together.
Right.
You know?
Nice. That's cool.
So who, you keep going back to, like, the 70s. Who do you listen to that's current right now that's an influence?
There's a lot of bands out right now that I gotta say, I'm really influenced by, and I know my band is too. Like, one band right now that I would recommend everybody check out is Cronbin. I saw them in concert at the Brooklyn Steel.
Right.
They only have two albums out, and that was, honestly, that was probably the best show I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
They were a three-piece band, and talk about a band that they just, they don't sing a lot in their music. But they are a band that pulls from so many different influences from all over the world.
Right.
Like, you can hear Egyptian music. You can hear...
It's pretty sweet. Cronbin, you said?
Cronbin, yeah. They, you know, they mix in funk music, and they mix in... Like, they have so many different influences from, like, Chinese funk to, like, just stuff from all over the world. Like, honestly, they're a band that you kind of just have to check out.
Right.
They are really incredible.
Well, it's also funny. It's like it's like the world in general, right? It's like back then, you know, it took the Beatles traveling to India to bring that flavor back.
Open
it took
door,
like,
yeah.
You know, Zeppelin getting into like Middle Eastern stuff.
Yes.
Like, it wasn't like I could just fire up iTunes or Spotify
yeah.
and see what's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you actually, people were like kind of curating stuff, right? Going out and experiencing things and then bringing it back.
Oh, definitely.
But now, like you said, like, you could get that sound of different parts of the country kind of anywhere in the country, you know?
Yeah, and I think, like, to hear a band like Cronbin actually pull out, like you said, like, that was one thing I was trying to search for in my brain, was, like, Middle Eastern music, they really incorporate a lot.
Right.
But at the same time, like, they know how to keep people interested. It's
right.
not boring, like, where I remember turning around and just seeing people of all ages, of all genders, colors, you know, just different races, but everybody was coming together because they have a sound that is so universal,
right.
where it there doesn't need to be a lot of vocals. It can speak to whatever language you are because it's just really good music.
That's cool.
They're happening right now. Tame Impala is one of my favorite bands. They're incredible. I'm
right.
going to see them in August.
Nice.
And there's a lot of other bands like the Black Keys. You know, they're another, like, really great band.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of bands actually out right now that are really good.
That's
you know?
Cool.
Pigeons Playing Ping Pong, they're a pretty good band.
Right.
You know, funk band.
Right. That's cool.
Awesome.
You want to play a little something for
yeah,
us?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Absolutely.
So, what are you going to play?
I'm actually going to be doing a song that is on my band, the Dead Ramblers EP.
Cool.
Color, Space, and Time. I'm just going to headphones on, and this song's actually on the EP. It's called Dead Man.
Okay.
And just to give you guys a little background about what this song's about, what inspired this song was the fact that a lot of young artists have been going have been passing away due to, obviously, you know, heroin problems. A lot of people are becoming addicted to heroin, and there's a lot of artists dying too young. We just lost Mac Miller. And I think, like, when we started this band, this was actually one of the first songs that we wrote. And I, like, wanted to write a song that was about kind of living that lifestyle of, you know, kind of living on the edge to where you don't know when your last moment's going to be. So that's what this song's about. I hope you guys like it. It's called Dead Man.
Nice. Dead Man. Awesome.
Eternal stone, you die with your blues all alone. You sold your soul, why can't you see? The cold dead ghost that you turn to be. Now you're shot down, last round. You were dead before you hit the ground. Shot down, no sound. You were gone, they didn't want you around. Took my mind to the other side. I thought I could stay, though I couldn't hide. I saw your face changing inside out. I crawled in your brain and I walked right out. And now I'm shot down, last round. You were dead before you hit the ground. Shot down, no sound. You were gone, they didn't want you around. Heavy soul in your mama's high. Another young man and you're gonna die. Shot down. Oh, last round. Shot down. Last round. Shot down.
Thank you.
That's awesome. Badass, man. So many questions flooding my mind right now.
That was killer, dude.
That was really cool. So I was curious, like, because obviously I saw you playing with your band and electric and everything, and guitar was a very intense part of your experience. So I'm always wondering what it's like. Like, even when I was talking to you, I'm like, do you play anything acoustic? So what is it like to play some stuff on acoustic for you?
It's really good. Like, a song like that, like, a lot of our songs, especially on Color, Space, and Time, they have such a rocky guitar solos and stuff like that, so you definitely have to kind of just simplify it and just like maybe cut out some parts and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I love playing acoustic, you know? Even with the band, like, I want to see us get more into that, like trying to incorporate maybe a couple acoustic songs just to get away from the consistency of electric guitar and stuff like that.
That's cool,
hitting people in the face.
Sometimes you forget. I mean, you can, there were some killer like guitar parts in that song acoustically, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so you forget sometimes you can still rock
shred
out on acoustic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, the end of that was great.
That would be cool.
So you mentioned Mac Miller. Is that like an influence, like that kind of what's going on right now in young?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been listening to Mac Miller a lot, especially through my brother. My brother Dylan's actually a hip hop artist and he's living in California, and I was affected by Mac Miller passing, but I think it probably hit him more because that's his favorite artist. And Mac Miller was I'm very upset that he's no longer here with us, because when you really take the time out to listen to him, he wasn't just like a rapper. He was a really, really talented musician.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, you know, when you listen to some of his songs, you could hear all the warning signs that were there, that he was basically telling people, like, I'm living this lifestyle. I'm doing this way, and I could die at any moment. Right. And then all of a sudden, he's gone. You know?
Yeah, so it was like 2009 is one of my favorite songs from the last
album.
That's
incredible. Yeah.
And Ladders is kind of like if you want red flags. Like, but he had the live set on NPR's Tiny Desk.
Oh, that is incredible.
And you could tell, like, he's not a rapper exactly. He's a musician. He does right. all the piano.
Oh yeah.
You know, percussion. It's all the real deal.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a lot. It's across the board, but that, you know, that's why I'm asking, because there's a lot of young musicians, you know, not even musicians, just young people going down that route right now. Right.
There's a lot of people that are, you know, Ocean County alone, you know, not to bring the conversation down.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But Ocean County alone has one of the biggest, you know, heroin problems. And I think, like, with somebody like Mac Miller passing, it's not just a message, I think, to musicians. It's a message to just people in general that, you know, there's a lot of shit going around that could kill you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, like, the thing with Mac Miller is that he was so talented, and the fact is that, you know, there's a lot of artists, you know, even before his time, and probably even artists, you know, down the road that will probably encounter the same problems, but... You know, I think it's important that these things get acknowledged.
Yeah.
I think, like, there's too many people that are, like, kind of sweeping it under the rug because it is a tough issue to talk about.
Right.
But it is something that it is like, well, listen, like, you know, addiction is a thing. Like, you know, there are people that are struggling with it, and they're, you know.
Yeah. Cuddy was one of the first. I remember who was just, you know, he would just open up about all his depression and anxiety and addiction issues.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, you don't think about – like, you think about Monmouth and Ocean County, like, you don't think of, you know, you don't think there'd be a huge problem, or you wonder why. And, like, I've been to some talks, and people are talking about it, is, like, we're just sort of, like, the corridor between New York and Philly, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, like, a dumping ground for shit, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, like, it is intense around here, you know?
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, I think that song that I played, like, that's probably the only song that I kind of, like, touch upon that, you know? Because, like... You know, I don't really like singing songs that are, like, going to get people depressed right now.
Thinking
too hard. I just, like, you know, I feel like if you're going to say something as an artist, you might as well speak your mind. You might as well actually talk about something real and don't – my whole approach is, like, don't sugarcoat it. Like, just tell people the fucking truth. Like, tell people what you want to talk about. Like, if you want to sing a song about sex, then sing a song about sex.
Right.
Don't sugarcoat it.
Right.
Just talk about sex.
Right.
Or if you want to sing about – you know, something that pisses you off, you know.
Like, be pissed off.
Yeah, be pissed off.
Yeah,
you know? Don't censor it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I think that's what, you know, on the whole, like, drug thing in this area is, like, people don't talk about it. You're right. It's like, I think people are freaked out and, you know.
Parents don't want people knowing.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's like, sort of like you said, it's like, you know, kids view it as like, oh, it's a good time and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But you're right. Until, like, that one kid just, that's his last time.
Yeah.
Then it really hits home.
Yeah. And I, you know. I'm glad that, like, if anyone can hear a song like that, and, you know, if I tell the audience, like, background, if one person can go home and be like, wow, I really appreciate the fact that this band, like, actually touched upon that, then we're kind of doing our job, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, but getting back into the positive thing to get out of the negative thing, you know, a lot of our songs, like, what I write about, I try not to keep songs, like, dark, you know, I try to keep songs, like, fun and... You know, not getting people down. You know,
yeah,
I don't want people going home being like staring at the kitchen floor.
Right. You said you guys want to get, like, the next album get funky, right?
Yeah,
yeah, definitely. Awesome.
So when you were writing, like, you left, you know, one band and then started a new project. Like, is it a clean break, or, like, are there things you've always been writing that kind of carried on, or did you guys all say, all right, let's start from scratch and let's create it, write a new album, kind of thing?
Definitely. When we were Wicked Hollow, we had songs. I wrote a lot of songs. Like, I had a lot of ideas that I brought to the table when we were Wicked Hollow. And we were performing a good amount of songs, actually, later on at shows that never saw the light of day. We never got to record them because we ended up breaking up. So I definitely said to my bandmates and told the lead singer from my last band, like, listen, like, these ideas that I brought to the table, like, they're going to stay ours, you know, like, we're going to all write lyrics to them, because at the time, he was basically the lyricist for Wicked Hollow. He would write all the lyrics. So I just said, I'm going to take these ideas and I'm going to write my own lyrics to them, and then whatever ideas you want to take that you wrote when we were Wicked Hollow, you take those.
Right.
And we had a good, you know, sign off as a band, I think. Where we decided, like, we're not just going to abandon these songs that we played as Wicked Hollow and really been pushing out there. Like, let's just keep these songs going. And then the next EP will take that fresh, clean start, clean slate, and just make completely new ideas. But
that's cool.
We had we have one song that's on the EP called Colors, and that was actually a completely, like, different song when we were Wicked Hollow. It was called Have Mercy or something like that. And then I was like, well, I really want to bring that song back, because I actually wrote that song Colors when I was in one of my first bands, Bad Minds.
Right.
And then we never did it as Bad Minds. We practiced it one time. It was like kind of a rough song. And then I brought it to Wicked Hollow, started doing shows with it, and then Wicked Hollow broke up. So I was like, I can't. We got it. Like, I have to do something with this song. Yeah. Like, I have to. Like, I really love playing this.
This song can't catch a break, man.
Yeah. So we wrote it as Dead Ramblers, and then that's when it was kind of like, all right, now it feels right. Like, now it feels like the right song. The lyrics are kind of coming together.
That's cool.
But, yeah, I think the fact that we've been playing for a while now as a band, we kind of know, like, what music, what kind of song we can make together as a band that will work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we're not just going to be like, all right, let's make a reggae song, because, like, we're not, you know, that's not our comfort zone. But we feel comfortable where when we get in a room and we just kind of start jamming, where we don't have a song that we're doing, we're just kind of feeling it out.
Right.
It usually we go in kind of a funkier direction. So I think the fact is, for the next EP, we should kind of make it more like what kind of comes out of jams.
Right.
You know, stuff that, like, audiences don't get to hear, because we're just, you know, letting it kind of flow out.
Nice.
Is that what your typical band practice is like? Is it like a lot of jamming, kind of open, or is it pretty, or does it depend? Like, if there's a gig kind of coming up, you're more focused on songs.
Yeah, kind of more like that. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think when we have a show where we, like the Stone Pony show, we had a very set songs that we were like, all right, well, we're not going to be playing long, so we have to pick our songs and really get them down, because we only have like a half an hour to win people over. We got to have a tight set.
Right.
And then if we have a, you know, like this Jamian show, we're more focusing on, okay, well, we got to learn more covers.
Right.
But when we are jamming for fun, yeah, like, I'll definitely try to show the bandmates more songs that, like, I've been working on, to be like, hey, we got to learn new originals, and we'll work on that, and then we'll jam a little bit. So it always depends. I guess it depends on whatever gigs are kind of like coming up.
Right.
You know?
That's cool. Yeah, I'm never one to tell a band what to do, but if there's any way you can work Dazed into your set at at the Mullet Gas performance, because I know a few people that it'll blow their friggin' mind. Like this one,
yeah, you got to do it.
We will, I promise.
I mean, there's one guy that's like the biggest Zeppelin, this Gaetano that we're friends with. He's like, he wrote a blog. It went on for like a year. It was like his dissertation on like the top, you know, 20 Zeppelin songs. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a huge fanatic.
Yeah,
and like, I just want to see his head explode when you guys play that too.
Yeah. He'll go nuts. Yeah, he's like a huge Greta Van Fleet fan now too.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. So that would be cool. You want to play another tune for us while we're here?
What song was on the radio that was featured?
We had a couple songs that got featured. We had Dead Man that got featured. We had Ramble that got featured on the air. And then what else did we have? We had another song. We had a couple songs. We had Burn.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
My Blues that got featured, and then we also had like another day where they featured
Colors. Oh, nice. Nice.
So I'm gonna be playing another one of the originals. Drag this all with me. There we go. So this is actually the song I was telling you guys about before that I've had for a couple years, and then it didn't really see the light of day until
the three band Colors.
Yeah, Colors. So I don't know. Should I play it first and then kind of explain to you guys the background, or do you guys want me to explain the background now?
Your call. Well,
tell us after on this.
I'll tell you guys after. Lost my pick like midway.
I couldn't tell if that was intentional or not. I thought it might have been.
Was that about DMT? it sounded like
that song. Should I go in the background about what that was about?
Yeah, sure.
That song is It's actually about a couple things. The first verse is about Bicycle Day, mm-hmm. which was on, I think it was April 19th, 1943. And I read a couple really good books that I would recommend. I read one book called Acid Test by Tom Schroeder, mm-hmm. and it was an excellent book which explained basically the history of psychedelics,
right?
Like LSD, mushrooms, DMT, mm-hmm. and it also talked a lot about a veteran who was, I think, in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he had, you know, killed people in the war, and he suffered with PTSD, and he went to MAPS, which is the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies,
right.
and worked with this guy. I think there's a couple of people. I think it was either Rick Doblin or Rick Strassman. I can't really remember, but they basically used MDMA to help him cope with his PTSD.
Right.
I read that book, and then I read The Doors of Perception by Aldous Huxley, and he was a guy that took mescaline and then wrote about the experiences of what mm-hmm. it was like taking it. And so these books kind of helped influence me with colors and kind of a direction to go in of songs, what I wanted to talk about. Not necessarily I wanted to talk about drugs,
right.
but talk about, you know, basically talk about the substances that are out there that can help people that are suffering with depression or can help people that are struggling with art or... You know, there's a lot of stuff going on right now. There's a show out on Viceland called Kentucky Ayahuasca, mm-hmm. and that's like one example of people that are, you know, that have dealt with trauma in their past life, that right. have maybe disorders or something, and they have this religious experience with ayahuasca, which actually contains DMT.
Right.
And on Bicycle Day, which influenced me for colors, Aldous Huxley, who was a chemist... for like I think a Swedish chemical company, he was doing a study on LSD, and they found that it basically came from ergot, which is a fungus that grows on tainted rye, and they were trying to figure out, you know, why during like the Salem witch trials, why basically people were eating fungus, like they were eating like tainted rye,
right.
and they were like hallucinating and freaking out on it.
Right.
So they started doing studies on it in the early 40s, and they wanted to figure out like, okay, well, what's an ergot that was making people like, you know, have these experiences? Mm-hmm. And Albert Hofmann accidentally dosed himself with LSD. He was like the first person to ever dose himself with it.
Right.
So the first verse in that song is actually about the chemist Albert Hofmann and Bicycle Day and how he accidentally dosed himself. And then the second verse deals with Jimi Hendrix and how he was an artist that used like LSD to right. actually help his art. And then, you know, the third verse is I kind of talk about like my own experience with the drug itself. Because, you know, I this is a subject that I like talking about. This is something that I would honestly debate with people because there's – you have – the drugs out there that are killing people, like heroin and fentanyl, and then you have this stuff out there that really, like, can help people.
Right.
You know, they're trying to – they're using psilocybin mushrooms for depression studies, people with, like, bipolar disorders, and people with PTSD. They're right. using ayahuasca. They're using MDMA.
Right.
I mean, they're even using LSD to help improve brain activity. There's a lot of stuff out there that – people are trying to prove, and like if you read books like Acid Test, they tell you like there are benefits of psychedelics. It's not just, you know,
right.
the stoner in his room that's taking, you know, using these things without precaution. These things can be used, you know, in small doses to actually right. help people.
Right.
You know,
yeah, professor. Cool. I mean, there's a lot of professors and scientists that are using it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. definitely.
I knew that the second verse was about Jimi Hendrix because you talked about the bandana. And that.
Yeah.
So is it true or false that he would have acid in the bandana?
I don't know. I mean, that's kind of like a debate. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. It was the 60s. Right. I mean, people were putting it in their eyes and stuff, and yeah, I had heard that he would cut
like
it.
Little cuts and then let yeah, it soak. And yeah.
Maybe. I think he was just a heavy acid head. I mean, yeah. if you watch like Monterey Pop, I mean, he's like definitely on, you know, right. acid or something. But yeah, I don't know. I wonder that myself. Like, I really wonder, like, was he like doing that? Probably.
Yeah.
Who knows? You know?
Yeah, I was a big fan of like, you can find some old footage. Like, for a while it was out there. This is like I'm dating myself, but it was more VHS days of like.
What's a VHS?
Yeah, exactly.
I got one of those.
It's this other weird psychedelic.
Okay.
But like Ken Kesey, like they put out all the films of his acid tests and the further bus and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And like we're rolling it out. So I have a copy of that somewhere signed by Kesey. It was pretty awesome.
Wow.
Like we were getting some footage for this other band to use as a video.
That's pretty cool.
It was really cool. Yeah, some of that stuff's it's like really intense. Yeah.
That's really cool, right. Man. Because I read, I didn't finish it. I read some of Tom Wolfe's book, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test,
yeah,
which is all about
that.
Right. Yeah, and I just, I love that. I mean, I love doing research on it, and that's why I really like, that's why I think Acid Test is a really good book, because they talk about everything. They talk about Ken Kesey, Timothy Leary, Terrence McKenna.
Right.
Terrence McKenna is another guy that I listened to a lot of his speeches, and he was a guy that went into the Amazon, and I think for like weeks or something, he was just eating. I mean, I would never do this, but he was just eating like psilocybin mushrooms,
right,
and writing about how he was just having like out of body experiences, like seeing like extraterrestrials and shit like that.
Yeah.
But it is crazy to think that like some of the most brilliant people in the world have used psychedelics.
Right.
I mean, Steve Jobs used LSD.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if it's true. They were saying like Albert Einstein might have. I mean, Timothy Leary was a Harvard professor.
Right.
And he was one of the biggest advocates for doing LSD. And I just think I think with any substance out there, whether it's marijuana, LSD, cocaine, heroin, I mean, like, I think anybody is going to use things in excess. Alcohol, you know, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I think like if you understand that like psychedelics are powerful, and that if you can use them responsibly, then I am an advocate for it. But if you're the guy that's just taking them because you want to get like fucked up and you're just going to take like excessive amounts of it, then you are not, you know.
Yeah, they're also, they don't have addictive traits, right?
No.
Yeah, you can't. It's like heroin's very different in that sense.
Yeah, like heroin, like you become physically, like heroin
dependent
can
on
kill
it,
you. Like, I think like for acid to kill you, you have to take like 5,000 doses or something like that, you know?
Yeah,
which is like,
crazy.
Who's gonna, what motherfucker is gonna?
I'm sure there's plenty.
There might be.
Someone else.
Like,
so it is pretty funny. There's a new Trey Anastasio documentary out, and it's a little bit sad, but one of the sort of premises of his new project is like his lifelong friend was dying of cancer or whatever. But there's a scene in the movie, the dude's going through chemo, and he has like a port like in his chest, basically, like an opening to take medication. So the dude's talking about it. He's like probably days away from death, and he's just talking about how he could drop liquid acid directly into his bloodstream.
Boom.
He's like,
trip
man, like, so like, he's like, Trey, come on, man, you got to go into the hospital and get your port put in.
That's wild.
That's a way to go out.
So he definitely he did go out the way he wanted. All right, so awesome, Tyler. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
thank
it
you very
was
much
like
for having me.
Really killer to hear more about you and obviously some live music.
I can't wait to see you guys live.
Oh yeah, guys.
Totally stoked. Then thank you for coming on board the Mulletcast Live celebration.
Of course.
Before that, check out the Dead Ramblers on the 17th at Jamian's. No cover charge, 10 p.m., 3 sets.
Mm-hmm.
Going to blow the roof off the joint, man. Mike's got a babysitter, so look out. And then also the Mulletcast Live 1-year anniversary. I don't think we've even talked about the full lineup, but we got Don't Believe in Ghosts, Connor Bracken and the Mother Leeds Band, the Dead Ramblers, David Rossmann, Mama Drama. Ming's going to be in the house. Ming, what do you got planned for that night?
I'm I got to be plugged in. Oh, I stopped my mic in.
I'm just happy to see you guys on stage. Can't wait for you guys to experience a live podcast. You guys haven't done it before. I'm seeing big things for you guys in future events.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we packed it heavy with bands also, so you don't have to rely on that. Ming actually told
us we want people to come, you know.
Ming told us, he's like, you know, don't be alarmed if like you're podcasting on stage and it's like all you hear is crickets basically.
You're not comedians, right. You know, you're not performing per se.
We have a comedian coming, so they can
it's going to be hard to give you guys a hook when you're seated up behind a podcast table, but
exactly.
You know, anything can happen. I mean, you guys have been entertaining here for over a year now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Almost pretty much over a year. So I can't wait to see you guys live on stage. Yeah. I can't wait to be up there with you guys. So right. Well done.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm psyched. I mean, it's really – and it's a good excuse to be up close and personal with lots of awesome bands like Dead Ramblers. You mentioned we do have a comedian. We got John Moses.
Yep.
Ray Cepeda is going to be on the stage. We got Liz Murphy. We got a little something special for her at Red Bank Red. She's going to like probably fire up the audience pretty hardcore. That'll be sweet.
She's pretty good at that.
Yeah. And then after she fires him up, Paul Mouchot and from Chill RX is going to chill him out.
That's so cool. That
so it's going to be pretty sweet.
That's so cool. Not to interrupt, but that's so cool you guys are having it at the House of Independence, because that's – I actually haven't been to that venue yet, but I hear it's beautiful. I've seen pictures of it, and I think like – You guys,
right on Cookman Ave, Memorial Day weekend. Right. It's going to be a killer on a Thursday.
You guys pick like literally the best venue, I think, to have it at.
That's that dude right there.
It'll be pretty sweet. And, you know, honestly, it's like I did talk to other venues, and not everyone gets what you're trying to do. Like one dude literally told me, he's like, we're not the right place for this, man. Like I started asking like weird questions like, you know, can we do X, Y, Z? But, you know, actually, like, you know, Ming's helped blaze the path. Like, people are definitely aware of, like, podcasting and, like, doing podcasting for events, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And who knows? You guys may turn into the next Kevin Smith, who's figured out how to make a lot of money doing live podcasts, like, you know, like multiple thousands of dollars per performance.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah. That's a cool thing, too. You guys are having, you know, the podcast show there. You guys are going to be able to air, like, all the bands.
Right.
Yeah. That's really great, man.
Yeah, totally. So not only... like go to houseofindependence.com and buy your tickets. Tickets are only $10. We're donating $1 of every ticket to Asbury Park Music Foundation.
That's awesome.
But we're going to live stream the event. So people are going to see a sick show with lots of really killer bands. I'm excited about
it. Yeah, it's going to be good time.
So one last thing before we go, because my daughter will kill me if I don't ask you this. But did you go to – was it Performing Arts Academy where you went
for
high school?
I went to OCVTS. In Lakehurst, actually, the hangar. So they did have the PAA. I went, like, my school – it's kind of hard to explain. Like, my school is on – same place as the PAA.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Because my daughter's starting at PAA next year. So,
okay.
So I'd want her to, you know, get the shout out that she was going – but I know they had, like, an audio engineering concentration there.
That's a really, really great program. And it's cool going to school there. Like, when the school bus kind of pulls up and you're just looking at this giant hangar and then you're just like, where am I going right now?
Yeah, they're
going
to, like, the hangar where the Hindenburg was.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, literally, the Led Zeppelin car. It's, like, the same exact place. Yeah. You know?
But they're building
– that's awesome.
Maybe next year they'll be at a new campus over at OCC.
They were talking about that.
Intense. All right, cool. Once again, check out the Dead Ramblers on Facebook and on Instagram at the Dead Ramblers. Their EP, Color, Space, and Time, on iTunes, Spotify, basically everywhere online. Check it out. I'm Evan Balmer. Find me on Instagram at Evan Balmer.
Mike Marcia at MortgageGuy_Mike. Dude, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tyler.
It was awesome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.